Welcome, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, 9th of September 2014, here on the other side of the dateline, but the 8th of September back where in the United States, where I'm joined on the line by our good friend Jack Blood, of course, of DeadlineLive.info, a frequent guest here, and now a host of a brand new radio program. Jack, thank you so much for coming on our program today.
You know, it's always great time traveling with you, James Corbett, and it's not a new show. It's the same show at a new location. And you know how I do it. Every year, I got to go to a different radio network. So I don't want to amass too big of an audience. You know, I'm trying to stay humble.
It's your wanderlust. Well, tell people how they can find the old show.
The Jack Blood Show at DeadlineLive.info. Of course, you can get your free archives there and listen live at, yes, here it is, Republic Broadcasting Network.
There's going to be a story there.
4 o'clock Central, 3 to 5 Eastern American time.
Sorry, I talked over you there. One more time.
Yeah, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, as always. And we're taking calls and going over breaking news. I might be one of the last people that do that. Breaking news while it's happening live on the air. It's an odd thing now, but I'm still in the game.
Yeah, in prime drive time, no less. So good on you. I'm glad to see you're back on the airwaves. And we'll definitely be tuning in. So I hope people will be tuning in similarly out there. Awesome.
Well, James, for those people that had trouble listening because of audio difficulties from my last network, those are all gone now. So come back, please. The water's still.
Great. Awesome. All right. Well, I'll be looking forward to that. Who have you got lined up for guests?
Well, you for tomorrow. And he doesn't know that yet, folks, because we're going to do some more time traveling, I think, here in a little bit. And our buddy James Evan Pilato is coming on. We're having a bunch of old and new people coming on to talk about the 13th anniversary of 9/11 this week. And then we've got a lot of special surprises as we move forward. A lot of good people in the pipeline, as always.
Excellent. All right. Well, as I say, I'm looking forward to that. So I'm looking forward to seeing all that spilling out across the airwaves in the coming days, weeks, months, years, and decades. But before we get ahead of ourselves, speaking of looking back, not precisely at the 9/11 anniversary, but at one of the many, many, many outrageous, ridiculous, preposterous events that flowed out of that, and you know, you could take your pick from any number, but let's turn our mind back 10 years, because I've been looking at these ridiculous staged beheading videos that are coming out right now that are trying to get us scared of the latest terror boogeyman. Meet the new terror boogeyman, same as the old terror boogeyman. And looking at these James Foley and Stephen Sotloff videos and the fact that they're quite obviously staged, and even the mainstream is now calling it out as staged beheading videos. And this takes us back, of course, to that phenomenon that really did pop up about 10 years ago of all of those beheading videos that were happening at that time, including, of course, the one that we talked to Robbie Martin on this program about a few months ago, where he helped his friend stage a beheading video that was then picked up by the mainstream press and reported as if it were real, because that's just the type of reporting they tend to do. And that, of course, brings us to one of the probably one of the best known of these beheading videos, which was the beheading of Nick Berg, whose body was found on May 8th, 2004. And there was, of course, the video that started to make the rounds on the internet at that time. And that caused, well, I mean, that was an entire saga in and of itself. And I know, Jack Blood, you were at the center of that saga. But yeah. For those of us who don't really remember the Nick Berg saga that well, I was still safely asleep in the Matrix at that time, so I only followed it casually through the headlines. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Nicholas Berg and who he was and what he was doing in Iraq?
Well, first of all, you said it, that these new videos have been debunked even by the mainstream as being obviously fake. That doesn't mean to say they're not, you know, intimating that maybe they killed them after the fact or killed them off camera. You know, one of my good friends is Penny Freeman. She used to work on the Ron Paul campaigns and was Deborah Medina's campaign manager, almost won the governorship of Texas without the monkey business. And she made a really interesting comment. And let me just start with this, that, you know, she works on a farm. They have a horse farm. And she's really kind of saying something that's so obvious that I haven't heard said too many other places, that you can't just cut a guy's head off with a knife. It just don't, you know, you just can't lop people's heads off with a knife or whatever, that you got to carve it and there's bone in there. It's a lot harder than it looks. So that would have been the big tip off. The fact that they were both filmed at the same time we did a little parody on these beheadings, and it was actually pulled from my Facebook. So they didn't want people to even be thinking that. I have a sneaking suspicion that a lot of this is for a very small group of people that have very loud voices and have opinions here in the United States and in what we call Oceania. The rest of the people aren't falling for it. But putting that aside, you know, I think it is notable that even the establishment says they think these videos are fake. Now, what happened after the fact, and where are these guys, or Daniel Pearl, or Nick Berg, for that matter? They're probably all dead, right? I mean, I think we'd be safe to assume that. Nick Berg was a contractor who was working in Iraq at the time, and that means we don't know what he was. Most likely he was a spook, because there were very interesting connections between Nick Berg, the contractor in Iraq, and Zacharias Moussaoui, the 20th hijacker. You know, the boob they tried to blame 9/11 on, who didn't look like he had a clue even where he was, let alone how he could have been involved in the project. But somehow he got his hands on Nick Berg's laptop. And these two were seen together on a bus, and there were other connections through Oklahoma City, James, which I think a lot of 9/11 did run through, and we've done some really interesting reports on some of the hijackers being in Oklahoma City, not just before 9/11, but after 9/11. So putting all of that aside, I mean, Nick Berg himself is just a very interesting person and a character and a person of interest who most likely had some spooky connections. So he's working as a contractor in Iraq. And I'm assuming that if you live in Iraq and you've been invaded, you probably think he's the enemy, whether he's got a uniform on or not. And so if he was beheaded, okay, that's kind of the chance you take. That's kind of what you sign up for. I hate for that to sound harsh, but we all know that that should be true. So they upload the beheading video, and we begin looking and asking some interesting questions, such as, well, how did Al-Qaeda in a cave in Iraq or whatever, how do these people who at the time were very low tech and maybe didn't have the wireless satellite hookups we have today, how did they upload this video? And so we did a trace, and we began looking and digging, and we found that the Nick Berg beheading video was uploaded through two main ports. One was through the GoDaddy.com, blog sphere, web sphere, and through their servers. So they could have snuck that in. But the other one was very interesting. It was through something called the Arab Press House, which at the time was even more influential in the Middle East as a news reporting entity than even Al Jazeera was, who at the time was seen as somewhat underground. This was the legitimate, like the ABC or the CBS news of the Arab world, James, the Arab Press House. And that's what got us in trouble. So what ended up happening to us, I'll tell you this, is that we got sued by an international law firm out of London, cease and desist. By that time, it was too late. Our story was kind of out everywhere. Who had a real problem with us implicating the Arab Press House or even mentioning their name. And then after that, a lot of really weird things started happening. We had our computers basically taken over at the radio station I was working at, WARL at the time, and opening windows that we never wanted to open that could implicate us as being potential terrorists. I had a I had a fake grenade thrown through my second floor window, landed right in my wife's lap, and then we had a little text saying, we monitor you. So someone was trying to scare us at the time, and we didn't look into it. There really wasn't much more to see. But if you watched and analyzed that video, James, I know you talked about this quite a bit, that the beheaders were wearing gold, that they were doing things that a radical, kind of like the 9/11 hijackers, that a radical, Islamic group probably wouldn't do. And that we thought that for all intents and purposes, that Nick Berg heading looked as fake as some of these recent beheadings have. But what was interesting is, yes, they did upload it through a major news entity. Now, how did they do that? Was anyone ever accountable for that? Did that ever come out anywhere else? But in our research, no, it was completely kind of brushed aside. I think at the time we made the point that a little girl, because at the time they were busting people for downloading music from the internet, right? That they can track a little girl and break down her door for downloading songs on Napster or on the internet, and these guys just seem to have free reign to upload these beheading videos.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like the U.S. military can track anything that flies on anything that moves with their spy satellites, you know, that are constantly circling the globe, but they can't find a giant airliner that just suddenly disappeared a few months ago. So it's more of that phenomenon. But let's back up a moment, because this is just one of those things that is just so mind-blowing that I don't even know what to how else we could possibly make anything of this other than to say this is absolutely spook central going on here. But this is absolutely a mainstream, completely, totally, 100% admitted, open part of the Nick Berg story. You can even see it on Wikipedia for Nick Berg, where it says, "Encounter with Zacharias Massaoui. On May 14th, 2004, it was revealed that Nick Berg had been investigated during the U.S. government's investigation of Zacharias Massaoui. Berg's email address had been used by Massaoui prior to the September 11th, 2001 attacks." Let me repeat that. Berg's email address had been used by Massaoui prior to the September 11th, 2001 attacks. According to Berg's father, Nick Berg had a chance encounter with an acquaintance of Massaoui on a bus in Norman, Oklahoma. This person had asked to borrow Berg's laptop computer to send an email. Berg gave the details of his own email account and password, which were later used by Massaoui. The FBI found that Berg had no direct terrorism connections or direct link with Massaoui. What a staggering story. What a ridiculous story that we're expected to believe that he encountered this 20th hijacker, but he was just a regular old reporter and who ended up getting beheaded in Iraq.
He wasn't even a reporter. He was like, he was a construction contractor or something, I think was his cover, Nick Berg. No?
You know what? You are absolutely correct. He was freelance radio tower repairman.
10 years ago, I'm trying to remember all the details.
So am I, yeah.
These beheadings. But that is so strange and has never really been explained by the mainstream. And I think most people that, you know, kind of barely watch the news would still believe that Zacharias Massaoui was the actual 20th hijacker. Though if you ask them what Building 7 is, they'll look confused. So there you go.
Yeah, well, I this is just seems to be so in your face and so ridiculous. And in fact, again, of course, just like what we're seeing right now with the Foley video and the Sotlov video, back at that time, there was multiple medical experts coming out and saying that there's no way that this is a real video. You had Asia Times Online reporting on May 22nd, 2004, that American businessman Nicholas Berg's body was found on May 8th near Baghdad Overpass. A video of his supposed decapitation death by knife appeared on an alleged Al-Qaeda-linked website, alansar.biz, on May 11th. But according to what both a leading surgical authority and a noted forensic death expert separately told Asia Times Online, the video depicting the decapitation appears to have been staged. And so they talked to Dr. John Simpson of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and Dr. John Nordby of the American Board of Medical Legal Death Investigators. And both of them confirmed that that it looked like a staged video to them. It didn't look like it had the right massive arterial bleeding and other things that they would expect. So, again, it seems absolutely fake, staged.
Yeah, maybe he had a face transplant or, you know, it's undercover in, you know, Ethiopia or something. For all we know, Nick Berg could still be walking around. That's kind of above our pay grade, right? I mean, we have no way to know what ends up happening to these guys. What we do know is that the beheadings were used 10 years ago in a clump to justify the surge, which did come the next year or the year later. But they had been working on it for quite some time to put more boots back on the ground because they hadn't anticipated the mayhem that would take place on the ground after the invasion. Remember, they were going to throw flowers at our feet and praise us for setting them free. That didn't happen, and then the surge needed to come because the P2OG/Gladio/Civil War was getting out of hand, and people were not able to do business. So the surge did happen. And now, what do we have? I mean, we have to justify troops on the ground, not just by the United States, but by Canada, by the United Kingdom, and several other of the so-called allies. And justifying this in this day and age, it's amazing that they could even use the same trick again, James. That's the thing. You would think that we as a people, as a species, would learn, no, we're not falling for it this time. And if you're a reporter and you go over, and that's the thing about, you know, some of these guys, they were Foley especially. Wasn't he very sympathetic with these groups? On top of the fact that ISIS, who is ISIS, as you've been continuing your open source report, James Corbett, you know, Well, then who beheaded these guys, if they even were beheaded? And that takes us into a completely different generation of this discussion.
It does, doesn't it? So let's go there, because you lay out the point of this beheading video, obviously. I mean, clearly it's intended to whip up the hysteria and keep people rallied around the flag of the invasion. And we could go one step further, because, of course, who do they try to pin the blame on directly? It's good old Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, who, of course, you know, which eventually becomes ISIS. So it's ISIS that killed Nick Berg, I guess. They could bring that out of the hat if they wanted to. But the interesting part of that, of course, is who's Abu Musab al-Zarqawi? Well, we have the actual documents that the Washington Post got back in 2006 claiming the Pentagon itself, the Pentagon's own briefing memos that the Washington Post got their hands on, was saying that the Zarqawi phenomenon was a psyop. Literally, you have Brigadier General Mark Kimmett being quoted in the Pentagon documents: the Zarqawi psyop program is the most successful information campaign to date. They were trying to build him up and build up the al-Qaeda in Iraq meme in order, of course, to justify further incursion into Iraq. So blaming this on Zarqawi, it's just win-win propaganda-wise for the Pentagon. So that's clearly what that's about. And then they blame it on their creation, their person that they helped build up in propaganda terms, at any rate, Zarqawi. So it just seems to win every single way for the Pentagon. And, you know, I think we can see where that's coming from. But then playing that out to today, I mean, what is the point of the current round of beheading videos? What is the point of having these ISIS videos coming out that are clearly staged, clearly faked, immediately called out as fake? Is that a propaganda, just a failure? Or did they do it so badly that now they've been exposed? Or is this meant to be exposed? What's going on right now?
Well, I think it might be meant to be exposed to those of us who aren't in number enough with consensus, right, to not do anything about it. They've just completely forgotten or don't care about us skeptics anymore, James. My feelings are a little bit hurt, because in the past they would seem to have to cater to the skepticism. Not anymore. So they're basically going to, and I apologize, whoever this might offend, because that's how I roll, to NASCAR America, or whatever it takes. The people that are out there, they support the troops no matter what. They support the cops no matter what. They're against what happened in Ferguson, Missouri here a week or two ago. You know what I'm saying? They are just very mainstream status quo, much of them older and Caucasian, maybe, America. And that's all they have to sell it to. I mean, it's like a presidential election. 50% of the people vote, so they only have to get 26% of the people on their side, and they can spend $1 billion to do that. I just don't think they give a crap about us anymore, James. They know we're going to be skeptics. They know that there's going to be a massive backlash. And you saw how they handled this recent conflict between Israel and Palestine. Anyone that said anything against Israel was instantly smeared as anti-Semitic. They had their propaganda machine and their PR machine working 24/7 on all cylinders, with as much money as it took to deliver that message to as many people as it took to deliver it to, so that they can get their consensus. So that's our challenge, is to make our group and our opinions matter more to the people at the Pentagon or the State Department. By the way, answer me this question, James. You're the smartest guy I know on the radio right now. Why would the State Department say fighting with ISIS doesn't automatically mean that your passport will be revoked? What do they mean by that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, within the entire propaganda matrix they've created, of course, that should be one of the biggest offenses. And that, of course, exposes the entire lie of this thing where they're talking about these hundreds of people who've fled to ISIS. They know where these people have gone. They track them every single place they're going, every country they enter and exit. This is not some sort of big mystery about who's over there. And yet they want to paint it as some sort of, you know, big question mark. How many hundreds or thousands of Americans and Brits and Australians and Canadians are out there? We better go, you know, we better go bomb them before they come back and get us. So,
well, does this mean John McCain doesn't have to turn his passport in now?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, yeah.
So, but that's so in your face, and we are living from day to day on this 24-hour news cycle, where today in this country, the big news was a football player, you know, punched his girlfriend. Or really? I mean, we haven't heard that. That's not a broken record. There's always something here to distract us and get us off from remembering what happened a month ago, which is it had been admitted all last year that al-Nusra and that ISIS or ISIL or whatever have been funded and aided and developed by NATO. So here's what happened in pre-Iraq or pre-Afghanistan or pre-9/11 Middle East. We developed the Mujahideen to fight the Russians in Afghanistan. Oops, sorry, blowback. They're al-Qaeda now. How many times can we as a people, wherever you live in this earth, James, how many times can we accept, oops, we messed up again? Is it blow back or is it blow front? We need to be asking.
Yes, well, we have to get rid of the blowback meme, because that is absolutely not just counterproductive. It's on its face ridiculous and absurd, and of course it's always used every single time.
You know what it leads to is, oh, well, yeah, we did all that in Iran-Contra, but we don't do that anymore. That was a long time ago.
And eventually it will be, yeah, we did that in Afghanistan, but we don't do that. And yeah, we did that in Iraq, but we don't do that anymore. Yeah, it's a constantly shifting goalpost, and it's never in the now, it's always in the past. So that, again, has to be shot down, that meme, that idea. And I hope to do that in some of my work in the very short, near immediate future. But then here's my question for you. We've seen the incredible run-up in the terror hysteria, the hyperventilation that's going on right now about the idea of an imminent ISIL attack on the United States, on Western targets. Do you think this is more hot air? Do you think there's an actual possibility of attack? Do you think there's a possibility of a false flag?
I was going to ask you the same thing. They had this real estate guy who fell asleep in his plane, I guess, down in Jamaica. I think he had some connection to the Rockefeller Group, but I have his name here somewhere. And it might have been Larry Glazer. I think it was Larry Glazer. So let's put that on the record, James. I know you're not going to edit this and make me look good. But it reminded me of what happened with Payne Stewart just before 9/11. There was some kind of a NORAD test or a NORAD head fake or something to that degree to either, you know, alert the right people and put the wrong people to sleep or strike that reverse. Does that make sense? So that was something that I thought was kind of weird. And it definitely got people a little bit nervous here. I never think it's going to happen. I never predict the terror attack, James. You know me. I'm the anti-predictor. So I would say no, but the polls allegedly say in the mainstream media that 90% say that ISIS pose a threat to the U.S. and 71% believe they're already here, which is what Rick Perry's been trying to tell people so he doesn't end up like Governor McDonald did this week, another governor indicted for corruption, right? This is happening quite. That's a whole nother story. What is going on there? These governors are really starting to feel the heat from somebody. It looks like a sea change maybe politically is happening in this country. But if 90% think that ISIS is going to pose the threat, 71% believe they're already here and that they could be a threat. If they did want to pull something, they've done the appropriate tests. And I think they'd get away with it. I just don't know what we'd have left to give up. I don't.
Yeah. Well, that's what scares me. I mean, if we saw anything even approaching the realm of a 9/11 at this stage of the game, I can't imagine that would be anything other than sort of the complete takeover of the U.S. I mean, it's already happened, and it's just a question of timing. But I mean, I can't imagine how that wouldn't eventuate into some sort of nightmare martial law scenario.
And, it is the 13th anniversary, James, and the weirdo elites like their numbers, and they love that 13 number, that little Knights Templar revenge for them. Would that be tempting to do? It would be great for me to predict every year that the economy is going to crash and every year that there's going to be a new 9/11, and that way the year that it happens, I'll be right. I'll have predicted it, but...
Well, you could throw World War III in that mix. And
exactly.
Yeah. Hit all the buttons in a row, yeah.
I don't think so. I just don't think so. It's so much harder to get away with than it used to be. So, and then we have an election year coming and all of that. It seems like this is just really more fear porn, but I hope I'm right, actually.
Yeah, exactly. No, I concur completely. I hope that that's the case. And we have seen this every single year around the anniversary in the 6 weeks leading up. There's some sort of terror threat. There's some sort of spectacular plane crash or plane security threat. There's all these stories, these 9/11 trigger stories that come along, and they all fizzle out every single year by October. So,
and you said it. It does, but it does trigger something in people. They remember that kind of fear, trauma-based mind control that they went through during 9/11. Any little thing that can trigger that is always good. And they have a harder time throwing 9/11 into a conversation since the Bushes and the Cheneys left here. So, you know, getting it in and up front again for the anniversary and helping you to remember why you gave up all your liberties and put your children and grandchildren in debt and became an enemy to the entire world. These are the things that we all should remember. That's how I look at it.
But remember, Jack, Obama got Osama. So there you go. Mission accomplished.
Did you see, I think they were putting that SEAL's jersey or his uniform in some memorial museum or something, the guy that killed. But I don't know who did. Did they ever say who the guy was who actually killed?
I thought they did not, and I thought someone came out claiming to be that person, but then he was discredited.
That was Bissonnette. That was Bissonnette, and I believe he just had an accident not too long ago. He was the SEAL that wrote about whole deal, and I believe they made movies out of it. It was on par with watching how Jessica Lynch was rescued. These are, if you don't remember that, folks, look it up on your Googler machine. But that's General McChrystal, I guess, helped engineer that, and we all believed it. Same thing with Pat Tillman, that he died a hero, and then we found out later he was killed by one of his own men. So, yeah, I don't know if there are any SEALs to actually see that, because James, as you know, I believe it didn't happen. So.
Well, there you go. So, I mean, take from this conversation what you will, but I think that at any rate, the skepticism is what we have at this point, and I don't think we should really just buy whatever the government is selling us just because they tell us. And I think that's perhaps one of the lessons we can take from the Nick Berg scandal, whatever that was. And I guess that's where I'm going to leave it with you, unless you have anything else to say on the whole?
Well, no, tune into our show here this week. Another thing I'm going to be talking about is whatever happened to Ebola. I think you and I talked about that the last time that we chatted, James. And I think one of my predictions at that point was it would dissipate from the media in about 2 weeks, which it pretty much did. And now, interestingly enough, we've made a correlation, between oil and gas and Ebola in Senegal and Africa. So as always, yes, the resources are right where the Ebola has stricken. And we're going to kind of bring that out in more full detail. And some other exclusive reports we have only at the Jack Blood Show, deadlinelive.info. Great being with you, man. It's so great to talk to you, and your listeners are lucky to have you, and I'm glad they support you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. Looking forward to talking to you again.
Stay bold.